very popular session. What a privilege to be chairing this one. Okay, thank you everyone. We'll get started. The challenges of pricing long-term group salary contingents. So we have two speakers here. Francis, just a brief intro. Francis is the head of pricing at PacLife Re. He is responsible for pricing all of PacLife Re's protection business in Australia. Francis has extensive experience in protection pricing both for individual and group business and is an actuary with over 25 years of experience. Prior to joining PacLife Re, Francis worked in a number of life companies, reinsurers and consulting companies, including as a marketing actuary at SCORE, head of development and research at RGA and chief pricing officer at Cobbinshaw. Francis is obviously an actuary and he's a perfect guy to keep everyone awake after a big long lunch. Brendan is a director of pricing at PacLife Re Australia. Prior to relocating to Australia, Brendan held the role of pricing team manager in PacLife Re's London office, where he was responsible for pricing protection and longevity deals within the UK and Ireland, as well as deals in US, Canada and Australia. A couple of housekeeping reminders, please tweet and please use the microphone to ask a question. And please don't forget to do the feedback forms. So I'll hand it over to you guys.
I'm a little bit nervous. I made a bit of a mistake before I start the presentation. I gave Brendan just to do a few tweaks before we sort of sent it on to the AD crew. So there may be some embarrassing pictures for us to see a T&L or not, but I haven't seen them, so I think if there is an embarrassing picture of me climbing a tree or something in there, then I'll have to
move on pretty quickly.
Okay, so the first thing is I'll be doing the first three five sections of the presentation, and then Brendan will be doing the last two. So I'm just setting up the scene, the background, talking a little bit about the Rice Corner Experience Study, and also talking a little bit about the model to talk about some of the patient's results. And then Brendan gets to do the hard stuff, which is the applications of the model. So this is the wordiest slide I have in the whole presentation. I'm very conscious it's straight after lunch and I'm in the dead spot for the second day. So this is about the only bit where I put loads and loads of words on the screen. The rest of it, honestly, is a lot more graphical, has a lot more pictures. But I just wanted to give you a snapshot of this. So the key today is it's not a new problem. It's an old problem, but it's me quoting the new data. So the idea here is that you have late notified claims have far less. I feel like I'm meeting my grandmother, it's like X in every room I've done this. Most of you would know that. I guess the issue is by how much, how do you quantify it, what is the impact, and that sort of stuff. And we've always struggled with that because it never really mattered. Most of us are federal gates. So this is an old problem. It's mentioned in the excellent IBNR discussion note that just over a year ago. And I'm never quite with it, again, looking like the lightsaber that we've got to compare. So basically, this bit here in the IBNR discussion note is talking about how you should expect termination rates for late notified claims to be a lot lower than termination rates in experience. It doesn't talk about methods and how you would just like to quantify that sort of thing. But it's pointed out that this is something you should consider, and you should potentially consider a different method for that person. So my two different television sets that give you the patient's whole problem new data. So the first thing to say is that new data is the inaugural Australian Group Insurance Experience Study, which is conducted by Rice Corner. So first thing I should do is prepare a sort of conflict of interest. Since I've been involved in that survey, we were helped there to provide additional resources and some expertise. So we'd like to say thank you very much to Rice Corner to sort of give us a good present on this today. It's an excellent data set. So normally when you get this problem in your group, you have a few hundred claims and the amount of late notified claims is not credible. So you know the data, you know the problem exists, but have the claims and always end up that old problem of credibility with handwriting. Not the case anymore. I think the long-term exposure in the Micropoint industry fund data set contains sort of about a third of the market and has 16,000 claims. So even with the late notifier, we're still looking at quite a decent amount of data here. And one of the things, I guess, the key findings for the Rice Warner investigation was that notification delay was indeed found to be a key rating factor for long-term benefit transition rates. And this is the first time, I guess, the published tables had that. So we've been really pricing for way too long, but you normally take IOD and take some sort of factor of that, and also some other retail table in the US or the UK or wherever. So the key point is we're used to taking termination rates and really pricing that is based on a retail study. And retail typically doesn't have any of these long-term notification delays. So what we found is that when you actually do a group risk screen study rather than a retail study, that you are missing this key group rating factor, which is notification delay. And it turns out that in this credible, really rich data set, that rating factor is an extremely important one. That's not as important as claim duration, but certainly much more important. Some of the more traditional rating factors, such as gender. So my thanks to Vice Warner for letting me publish a couple of the graphs from their extra report. There's a couple on here. This first one is showing four claims, and it's also showing termination rates. So here you can see that these ones here are the termination rates for claims that are notified in the first couple of quarters, the first 6 months since the incident date. And you can see it varies by age, with the younger ones having a bit more of an accident hump, I guess you'd say. And then the later ones here, these are claims that termination rates are somewhere between 2-4% for claims that are notified sometime in the third and the fourth quarter. This little spike here is a result of some of the product design features in the particular teams that constitute the study, and I'm not going to spend too much time on those. This is the termination rate for those claims that have occurred in the second year and the third year plus. So, just looking between the two, you can see obviously there's a massive difference between the two. So, early notified claims have got double-digit terminations in early claim durations, and then you're looking at long-term termination rates. After that, you're looking at sort of termination rates that are varying at 1-2%. So it wouldn't be an actuarial presentation, or at least a three-star after lunch technical actuarial presentation without a toy model, and you do not disappoint. So here's a little picture of the sort of model we've got. What we're trying to do here is not necessarily price a scheme of this model, but just to illustrate what the differences are between allowing for the key rating factor. So the first thing we've got is an IBNR assumption. And then we've got a set of termination rates. So we haven't used any real scheme data. We've tried to use notification data based on the Rice Warner published data. And we've got a couple of delay patterns. So the quick one and the slow one, technical terms after lunch, but basically the slow notification delay is something like a minute of time versus a quick one. So here you can see that most of the presentation will be using the blue slow one. But we've also done the results on the quick one to show you some sense. So here are the assumptions we've used in our model. Probably worth spending a little bit of time talking about the black dotted lines. So these are the assumptions we've used into our model, which are based off the Rice Warner. We've taken an aggregate sort of demographic with an average age. We're not going to model the product design feature, the 24-month one. But what we are going to do is we're going to model a couple of aggregate ones. So the principal toy model here, which is really just to illustrate the point, is just saying, let's take a model where we have termination with vary by the notification delay. And then for comparative purposes, what we've done is we've looked through and said, what is a single termination rate that gives me exactly the same answer, but it doesn't vary by notification delay? And then you can see the impact of notification delay and how it rises over time. So this is more of a toy model to show you the sort of impact And I've got, what it means, of course, is that obviously early notification is quite a summation rate, so you have an earlier quick notification pattern to come up with the same back solving answer, you need to have higher summation rate in aggregate. So you'll find that the aggregate financially equivalent actual one is dependent on your notification rate. Or putting it another way, here's the runoffs. So you'll notice that for the runoffs here are very slow. After 80 months, you've still got over half of the business, half the claims still in force at that point. And the blue one here is the runoff on the early notified claims. And then the solid and the dotted lines are the aggregate runoffs, allowing for the different quick and slow notification periods. Now, many of you who know me quite well, or if any of you who've worked with me for more than 6 or 7 minutes, will know I have an absolute love of pastel colours in my spreadsheets, and the rest of the presentation does not disappoint. So, here is the way I like to think. Now, obviously, I've reduced a lot of the rating factors here. I'm just looking at a particular age, and I'm just looking at a single event here. So I'm just looking at a particular month of experience. Traditionally, we've looked at this claim duration, but we're also introducing this idea of notification delay. So in the toy model, we've got a lot of tables that are two-dimensional that has claim duration going down one of the axes, and I've got notification delay going across the top. So what that means in this model here is that the number of claims in force along with notification delay is basically your IBNR hat. So this is an assumption I brought forward. And then the first row is 100% runoff. Then next, it would be 95%. You're basically multiplying the runoff by your IBNR pattern. And you're coming up with this grid here. And it's color-coded into my purple and green pastel colors because this is Q1 to 2 notification delay, and this is Q3 to 4. But that's not what you actually see in practice. So the thing about GRIP is if the information builds up very, very slowly. So in month one, the first month after this event has occurred, we are modelling 100 claims here. We see one of the claims in terms of the exposure to this. So I'm seeing in this particular nice chart here, just the top left-hand corner, which is the tip of the iceberg. Month two, ooh, we get a little bit more information, but you're still seeing virtually nothing. So on this one here, these columns are basically notification months, and then the rows are basically the claim payments months. So now what you're seeing is claims are notified in 32 months and claim payments relating to the first month of payment and the second month of payment. So this is the amount paid for a claim that's in course of payment. This is the amount that gets paid in that month, and then this one on the top here is actually a catch-up payment. So in practice, you know what happens in claims teams, they get one, they commit the claim, the person's actually been off on claim for a couple of months, and not only do they pay that month's claim, but they pay the catch-up. I promise you have a lot of pastel colours in this one here. So this is the sort of, at least the first 12 rows of the table, but it's divided into these four different buckets here. So each of the month 1-6, 7-12, 13-24, and 25-plus has a different pastel colour relating to the different assumption in the rising one set. So the IBNR goes along the top here, but the notification of the runoff patterns along the columns now vary by notification delay. And they vary quite significantly. So you can see that, well, you can't quite see this massive row of numbers unless you've got superhero vision, but they run off a lot quicker for the early notification. I've just collapsed that. I'll show it graphically in a moment for those people in the back, but you can see that basically you've got the claims runoff, and what I'm doing is I'm sort of grouping it just into the four main categories. Again, it's just a single event period, and we're just looking again at this sort of table. So what I'm using here is basically thinking it as an incurred view. So this is a view you'd see if you could look into the future for that particular event period and see all the notification delays and see all the claims runoff for each of those notification delays. So I was conscious after lunch, so I thought, what do I need? I need lots of charts and lots of pretty pictures. So I've used the same colour convention all the way through, and I've been showing a few of these to show the relativities. So the one at the bottom here is the runoff for all those claims that have been incurred that were notified in the first 6 months. The next layer of my multicoloured tiramisu cake is those that have been notified in the third and fourth quarter. And you can see there's still quite a lot of cases here that would be on an incurred view that have been notified sort of 3 years plus. And here is the sort of, you can see how much is going on. And you'll notice the purple is a lot bigger area. And I'm a very graphical person. I find things easy to see visually. You'll notice the purple area here is a lot larger than the other colours, which indicates that this is the sort of notifications you're seeing, early notifications. That's consistent with a sort of 10-12% termination rate in early claims durations. You can see that the terminations for the late notifieds is tiny all the way through the claim duration, but does build up towards the end. So what do? We do group risk pricing, when we do termination rates, and when we do
Sorry, Francis, I'll just go back to that last one. So the top part of that graph is the ones that are notified from 3 years onwards.
Yes.
So time one, does that mean the 37th month, or does that basically say, well, time from incident?
It's time from incident. It's all mapped to the same.
So month. There should be no terminations whatsoever in that period.
Not when you're notified. So this is what you'll ultimately see several years down the line. So you're quite right. There'll be a few more charts to show that a little bit earlier on, but you don't know about these claims until a lot after the event. And it's the tip of the iceberg. I looked hard and fast for this one. You don't know how many iceberg graphics I have to pull through to get you this one, but this one was definitely So that excellent question just shows you the difference we're talking about here. So traditionally, we've got this incurred view of the world, and I guess that comes from our actuarial techniques that we've used and have come from the retail area, where there are very short notification delays, and you sort of expect to see things as they occur. Really, what you see then when you do group risk pricing is this notified view of the world. So you only see some of the information going through. So take you back to the slides before, you only see this tip of the iceberg building up here as the notification transition has come through. And what I wanted to show you through is that when you allow for notification as a rating factor, the differences between an incurred view of the world and a notified view of the world are stark and are quite material, particularly for certain practices. So this is the same box of tiny, tiny numbers, and again, unless you've got phenomenal eyesight, you won't be able to tell the difference. But there's a lot smaller numbers up here because this is only the claims you see as they come through. So when your question was quite right now, you're not seeing any exposure to risk in year two and year three until the appropriate month, and you don't see any terminations relating to year three notifieds until month, basically, 36. So this, again, is still looking at 100 claims. It's still a same sort of view of the world, just for 1 month. I'm not layering on another dimension, which is the number of months in your experience analysis, but it means that you're only seeing a very small number of claims. I've deliberately kept the axis here the same. So, again, we're looking at 100 claims. I thought it was fascinating. You only actually get to see 40 of them at any time. So, you know, you only see 40% of the claims. And, you know, 100 will incur, but most of your claims assessor are only dealing with any point in time is 40. And the reason for that is because you've got this, like, graph effect where water's going in, water's going out. You've got claims that are coming in, notified, and then claims that you're closing are going out of the bubble. Look at the purple. I mean, you, in terms of the graphically, you can see what's going on. Your exposure to risk is based on the different proportions of different colours by notification delay. And you've got the amount of notified claims to terminations you see. Not unsurprisingly, the amount of terminations you see in the first few years are dominated by the early notified claims. Now, I'm realising, I'm telling my grandparents how to psychedelics here. It is, when you look at it like this, it's actually really intuitively obvious and quite, you know, but we've not had the data to be able to look at this and look at these people before. Now we do. So some of you are going, okay, that's great, but, you know, only 1 month. Let's move away from the idea where you just look at one instance model and see what I've done. And so the toy model has an extra layer of dimension. So what I've done here is I've looked at a 60-month period. So I've said, look, we're going to have at least 5 years of data. Yeah, LBG27 says consider these 5 years of data. So you're going to have 60 months of data. And what I've come up with there is that I'm now looking at almost 5,000 claims in my exposure. And this is the pattern you'd see when you do group risk pricing or when you're doing your reserving from a valuation point of view. You've got a weighting of notification delays. So for the earning it by claims, you're going to have 60 months worth of exposure. Each of those 60 calendar months could contribute. You would see above the waterline, the tip of the iceberg, a lot more claims that have been incurred in that first 1 month notified delay and that claim duration. And then you layer it on and layer it on, and the amount of exposure you get for late notified claims or claims in their later durations is considerably reduced. So, similar sort of thing here. I've just put the two pictures side by side. Now, the scale is different, but you can see the relativities. There's a far, far steeper runoff when you look at the notification layering. So 60 months worth of data with layering on top. The tiramisu cake is very different in terms of its shape if you look at the traditional incurred view, which will be the equivalent sort of retail view of the world. And here's the equivalent site for terminations. So again, just looking at the different proportions of purple, green, and blue colours in the terminations versus the thing, you can see the relative proportions. So what does this mean? Well, we put it through the model. Now remember, I'm assuming an aggregate termination function here that I back-solve give exactly the same answer. So ultimately, there will be exactly the same terminations, exactly the same pay, exactly the same financial outcome. All we're looking at here is putting a termination rate that varies by notification compared to one that doesn't, and seeing how the information comes through over time and what that's going to mean. And the answer is that your perceived rates of termination are biased initially as the information comes out, and it only asymptotically approaches the true answer over time. If not, it goes up or down, or it can go either way. It only goes in one direction because you're notified claims early have a higher termination rate. So what this shows is this is the ultimate termination rate, and this is the termination rate I've assumed in my model. So it's the correct answer. The one here in purple is the termination rate I get looking at that 60-month study. So what I'm doing here is I'm basically taking an experience study that has got the wrong mix of notified clients. And I'm now allowing for notification delay as a rating factor. If I don't allow for notification as a rating factor, I get the answer wrong. And I get the answer wrong because my mix of early notified claims in my experience study is a greater weighting than it is ultimately. I'm basically too heavy in early notified claims. And if you just take the same answer, I should get exactly the same result. If you take the same answer, I'm getting a termination rate right here. The purple one is what I get through my experience study. So if I don't allow for notification delay in my experience studies, I'm always, always going to get my notification delay wrong. How much so by will vary by a number of factors. I've shown here the red line, which is if I only had 36 months of data. Now, obviously, we'll be pricing on that. But it gives you an idea of the sensitivity to the block of exposure. It also depends on whether or not the 60 months has got old claims coming through because it might be an existing insurer. If you change insurers halfway through and you've only got the claims from one company, then that has an impact as well. So these are illustrative. I said before, we had a quick notification pattern. This is a notification pattern on something that's a lot faster. This would be a traditional master trust, I guess, but this would be the impact for, say, an industry fund. And around about here, just gives you an idea, the sort of impact on claims cost or DLR for a typical demographic for a slow notification delay pattern would be something in the order of about 10%. For master trust, the pricing impact could be 5%. For a retail experience study, I guess it's probably less than 1%, which is why it hasn't traditionally been an area of concern. I'm now going to pass over to my learning colleague.
Thanks, Francis. You kept it relatively on time as well, which I think is a surprise for all of us. Exactly. I went to the Victorian National Museum, I think it's called, on the weekend, and I was looking at some of the art that they've got there, and I think your pastel tables definitely beat a couple of the office chairs and that sort of stuff that they've got on display there. So I might write to them after this, see if we can get some of this up in the museum. So no embarrassing pictures yet either. There was one of I think a beer being drunk from a shoe, but we'll stay away from that for today. So I'm going to be looking a little bit more just at the sort of practical implications of some of this. So Francis has talked about the possible effect on actual termination rates of looking at the incurred view versus a notified view where you split your basis up into different notification delay groupings. So I'll just be talking a little bit more about practically implementing that into experience studies and also what the impact might be on reserves. Okay, so I'm again not going to go into too much detail on this slide. I think we all know how experience studies work generally. We've got the a priori assumption, which is an area, I guess, that we would have struggled before, not having a credible data set. We've now got the Rice-Warner data to allow us to have that view of how experience differs by notification delay, and whether you want to adopt those tables or use them to consider the relativities on an internal set of tables. So, I mean, either of those, I guess, is a possibility. So you can use ratios to adjust your internal tables. And obviously, critically, we need to now include another factor when actually doing experience investigations on funds. If we actually want to look into it, you would include smoker status as a factor in your tables and then just ignore it completely. So, okay. So as Francis mentioned, the vast majority of experience will be for the earlier notification categories. So I guess what we're saying is that there's a little bit of a sort of leap of faith that's needed when you're trying to put these assumptions around the later notified claims, especially on smaller schemes. There are schemes where you'd be able to test quite reliably, I guess, with enough years of data. But it really sort of begs the question, then, how do you allow for credibility at the later durations in terms of notification delays? So I think we'll all be familiar with how complicated it can be setting bases for IP and group salary continuance. So really sorry for suggesting that you need to add another dimension to it all. But I suppose similar to the impact of longer-term claim recoveries, where they tend to be a lot lower and vary less scheme to scheme, we might expect a similar thing to happen with the longer notification delays, given it's you're seeing almost the sort of level of impaired mortality recoveries, I guess, rates very similar to what you would see 4 or 5 years after someone's come on claim, even if they're notified early. So there's other correlations to think about as well. There was a good talk done earlier on use of GLMs in group experience studies. I think that's probably where this needs to head as well, to try and capture all of those things in the correct way. Obviously, something to be mindful of if you're using internal tables and you want to look at adjusting for notification delay, just bearing in mind the interaction between claim cause, between age and occupation as well. And then I suppose the elephant in the room to some extent is the impact of the shortening delays over time. So we've seen that happening in the TPD space and also to some extent in the GSE space. And I guess it's a question of what's causing these people to terminate less. And I guess the two main reasons could either be insurer involvement, so not being able to have that contact with the claimant, not being able to sort of advise them on how best to return to work or get them in part of a sort of rehab or retraining course. But the other sort of option, I don't know if many people were in the life insurance disruptors meeting where there's a stat quoted there, which is that I think 40% of baggage claims or eligible baggage claims never get claimed. And we could potentially be seeing something similar here where it's not that necessarily the termination experience is that much lower, but just the people that have recovered don't go on to then notify their claims years down the line, which I guess to some extent also makes sense. So if we just look at that same sort of model, so you've got your claims paid at the top that you know about, so you project your DLR downwards, and you've got your IBNR over here. We're just quickly going to have a look at the impact on the different reserve components. And again, we're using aggregate termination rates now, which give us the same result as if we use separated out termination rates. So we're just looking at the sort of allocation of reserves over time. So that's what we get on the left-hand side here. So we've got claims being paid, very similar between the two. We've got IBNR, which is obviously at the start of your claim developments. And this is just for one sort of incurred period. So we're just looking at how the claims develop over time. Your IBNR starts off quite similar. We've got the darker colors here representing the notified view of the world, and then the aggregate view of the world is the lighter colors behind it. We'll see that a bit clearer on the next slide. So your IBNR is higher under the notified view. Your DLR is actually lower to start off with, but they sort of tend towards the experience of the aggregate. So just looking at the ratios between those different bars that we've got there. So at the start, we don't really have an awful lot of DLR or anything. So what I was saying before, we've got the experience at 100%. So it's exactly the same sort of starting position. But quite quickly, you'll see what happens. Your DLR goes to about 30 to 20% lower than what it would otherwise be in an aggregate view. And that's just because we're applying these higher termination rates for claims notified earlier. But vice versa for IBNR, where the claims that are notified after a number of months or years have much lower termination experience, therefore you'll get higher annuity factors, higher claim amounts coming through there. So the sort of takeaway from all that is that the implicit assumption that notification delay sort of comes out in the wash may potentially be untrue. So just a little bit more on pricing considerations. So Francis mentioned the IBNR discussion notes earlier on. I suppose if you buy that there is this impact between notification delay and termination rates, there's two approaches that could capture this. The one would be to use actual amounts. So take the actual paid value and then estimate a DLR on top of that. That's obviously quite volatile. So even if you do that on lump sum business, just the variability in claim amounts gives you sometimes quite large results. If you have a large claim or you don't have a large claim, and you get that sort of volatility as well as the volatility in terms of length of claim coming through there. So the other approach that we're quickly going to take a look at is that of count times average claim size. So you could have sort of something in between. So you could use the actual claim amounts, but then use an annuity factor to sort of scale those monthly amounts up. You would make an assumption about the average monthly benefit size, which could vary by notification delay, and then you scale it up by an annuity factor. And that could be based, again, on actual claim characteristics, so making sure you capture things such as age, gender, cause of claim, etc. So just if you reset all of those claims to claim on zero, that sort of gives you a view of the actual schemes annuity factors over time. And that gives you a sort of more stable view and also a view that you can test out the impact of tweaking some of those assumptions. You can look at a bit more easily, if you did use a notified view versus an aggregate view as well. So that's a little bit what it might look like if you did in practice, just with some simulated values over there. And then we've got the annuity factors along the bottom here. These are obviously grouped, so as they are in the Rice-Warner table, so you might want to consider, say, smoothing them out. So we've got annuity factors for long-term IP. We have considered for short-term IP. It's obviously a smaller impact overall, especially for two-year business. But we do believe there's probably a similar sort of effect going on there. So I think that brings us to the end. So any questions, please?
Thanks, guys. That was fascinating. So a lot of talk there about experience studies and pricing implications. The other one that's in my mind, though, is the current profitability and reserving, which you did touch on. So the industry, as we all know, a few years ago was in a very dark hole and has been clawing its way out. Is it the right interpretation of what you're saying there, just that perhaps we haven't clawed our way out as far out of that hole as perhaps we've been thinking, given that we haven't been recognising this the implications of this notification delay rating factor?
Excellent question, Kent. So I guess the answer is it depends in some ways. It'll be very dependent upon the approach that companies use. So some companies may already use, say, action amounts, and that might capture a lot of what's happening, say, in the IBNR developments. But as Francis was showing, it also depends on how much experience you've got available. So I suppose for new products that get launched in the long-term GSC space, if you're analyzing the experience without this factor, you might think it's running quite well, and then as the years go by, you might need to adjust your reserving assumptions accordingly. I mean, in terms of pricing, which is my background, I think there's probably a lot more going on. So once you've done all this, you need to think about how you're going to be setting trends, etc. And so that graph a couple of slides ago showed just the DLR and the IBNR go opposite ways. So I think you might get cases where, depending on how you're setting your trend assumptions as well, that you could see it going up or going down. But certainly when you're considering the tail in terms of IBNR, and if you weren't using an approach which allowed for larger claims in that tail, then I'd say yes, it might be potentially under-reserving.
Thanks for the question, Grant. I don't think it's a all doom and gloom, Mr. Mannering type sort of situation. It certainly wasn't the intent for us to scare you after lunch. The impact is that it's very variable against which schemes you're looking at. So as we've shown you, the worst case, which is long-term disability, the impact for short-term disability is a lot less. And we've also shown you the worst case, which is a slow notification delay. So if you have a quick notification delay, the impact is considerably more reduced. And then it depends on what period of analysis you've got. So the 60-month example we showed was assuming that that was your first claim. I guess if you had 5 years' worth of data, but you'd had in-force claims, you can get reduced numbers. So for a small number of some schemes, it can have a very significant effect. It can be more than your profit margin in pricing. For the market as a whole, I guess it's probably not going to be the same sort of thing as we've gone through before. So we can all go, phew. And in terms of the reserving, there is that aspect where the DLR and the IBNR come out. So I think it's probably have a little bit more to do with pricing than it has to do with reserving. Fascinating one, I think Brendan did talk about, was just the implications of new product design. So I think we've all been there where you've launched a new benefit and you've seen it and you sort of thought it was going to be like this. And then the first year of experience comes through and you go, oh my God, it's fantastic. And then the next year goes, it's not as good as what last year, but it's still pretty good. And then, 3 or 4 years down the line, your sort of experience comes back to what you thought. Now, normally you'd say, oh, that's great. I'm a genius. I got it right first time round. I don't know why I doubted myself. But unfortunately, at that point in time, the project's probably been repriced downwards and you've come under pressure that you were too conservative to begin with. So I guess that's probably the most extreme circumstance. But from a reserving point of view, if you've had the book for a long period of time, it's been in your in force and you've had it for several years and you've got 10, 15 years worth of claims data, then I think you could perhaps rest in your sleep quite well. But just be careful in certain schemes for pricing that this could lead to very significant results.
I think just while people are thinking about more questions, just to carry on from that, I think the Australian industry has come a very long way in terms of its IP tables in the last couple of years. Moving from data that was based in the 80s to something that's GLM based on the retail side, and we've now we've sort of woken up considering more factors on the group side, and I mean, as Francis was saying, we're not trying to preach doom and gloom, but more sort of when people realise that smoking is bad for your health, then maybe they need to include that as a rating factor. Let's just, keep an open mind, I guess. And as we were saying before, it is complicated to price already, so there can be that sort of inertia against adding more complexity to the models. But I suppose sometimes it's worth doing, and seems like we're heading into it's a very interesting time where GLMs are the norm, and this sort of thing will be more commonplace, I suppose.
So just your comment on Australia and how far it's come. Any comments in relation to what others are doing in UK or South Africa, and what your initial observations are of Australian data?
I just want to say to the KPMG experience study that was in the retailer side of things, was probably, and this one here for Rice Warner, we perhaps couldn't have gone any further or any faster in the last few years. So, a few years ago we'd had a table that was extremely out of date, and nothing on the group side. So I'd like to say thank you again for Rice Warner for letting us do this presentation, and it's an excellent study on the group side. It brings out that notification, and on the retail side, having seen most of the experience study tables in the world, I can say we've probably gone from last place to first place down under in terms of the quality of the table. So as a profession, I think we can be rightly proud that we've made enormous grounds on this sort of experience study in the last few years, both in group and retail.
Hi, Phil Stott. Thanks for everything, guys. A pretty practical question. If I understand what you're saying correctly from your analysis, then the correct adjustment for this notification delay is something of the order of 5 to 10% adjustment overall in the risk rate. That's obviously a significant impact, but a second order compared with the base level. And I'm just thinking, from your analysis of the data, what's the practical way of actually allowing for that? I mean, do you actually need to go to the extent of adding an extra dimension into your analysis, which is obviously a very complicated way of doing it, or can you get away with just applying a 5 or a 10% loading?
You can't get away with applying a 5 10% loading, because the answer is, it's classic actuarial stuff, right? It depends, but it really does. So the answer could be naught, the answer could be 15. So it really does depend on the scheme-by-scheme basis. In terms of the application for it, it doesn't have to be too complicated. If you have either in your own internal data or taking the relativities out of the Rice-Warner data, you get a clear view of the differences by notification delay. If you apply the chain ladder or whatever technique you want to do by numbers and then use this annuity factor based on that sort of amount, then you get a very sensible answer. So it's not absolute rocket science that you have to do to correct this. It's just, I mean, the purpose of this talk was to show you how big the implication could be, to show you that this is an old problem and then there's new data, and that the solution to it, I think, is the solution that was proposed in the IBNR discussion note. It's just, here's some information. You can actually now do something with that. So it's sort of nice to feel that the people in the IBNR discussion note group have now been vindicated.
We've got a theory about why late notifieds have such bad terminations. The obvious one is the one you mentioned, is that they're missing late notified claims that had short durations. And if that's true and that's what you believe, do you think the industry's pricing for those being unwound? If it's not that, then what else could it be? I mean, the obvious one is cause of claim would be different. So I wonder which. It's nice to know that it's there, but the better question, I think, is, do you have a good suggestion why it's there?
Excellent question. The answer, I guess, is that there are a lot of correlations here. So looking at the charts and stuff like that, the high termination is ready to begin with. A typical case would be somebody who break a bone who might be off for a few months. They're going to notify relatively quickly and get paid out, and it's going to be a pretty easy case and terminate quite quickly. Obviously, some things like mental health disorders might take a long while before that's diagnosed and before it becomes clear that is a particular claim, and it's also linked in with awareness. I guess a lot of times what you get is people who weren't aware of the claim, who then notify late, are clearly still on claim. I think there's probably a propensity that there's probably a correlation there that people who wait a long while are still going to be on claim when they do so. So you get a certain amount of selection coming through from that aspect. And again, you've got to be very careful, as we sort of hinted at before, around the correlations between notification delay, occupation, and also cause of claim. But the key thing for me, though, is that when you price and when you're projecting, is to make sure that your exposure and what you're doing is consistent. So, yes, you could perhaps get the same view by having different causes of claim and stuff. You need to make sure that if you do see a change in those rating factors, you project that forward in your population over time to get the right termination rates. And notification delay clearly is massive in terms of the group. Yes, you could put it through a GLM later down the line. I think that's probably, as Brendan was saying, where it's heading. But I do think that that there is something quite significant there. The question again is whether or not it's going to change over time as notification delays shorten.
Yeah, I think that covers most of what I was going to say. Just in terms of correlations, we've had a look on our internal data. It's obviously not quite as large as the Rice Warner data set, but that's definitely sort of the next steps. And I guess if you did have a basis that correctly allowed for cause of claim, you might be capturing exactly the same thing as what we're suggesting here. My best guess is that there would be enough of an impact coming from both of those to be able to allow for them both at the same time. Of course, the challenge on causes of claim is trying to get something that's standardized enough across the industry, so back to all the question marks over data quality, etc. But we won't go too much into that.
Charles here from CommInsure. I've got a more broader question on long-term IP in general. Say if someone is off work for 5 years and you're trying to project their termination or return to work right from that point on, I guess it's very much down to the specific circumstance of that person, whether the relationship with the employer, the specific condition, the quality of the claims and rehab assessor working on the claimant's case. So given all those very individualized, very contextual factors that can influence termination rates on a long-term IP product, do you think long-term IP is something that can be sustainably priced or statistically modeled, the termination rates beyond 5 years?
I think that the termination rates beyond 5 years tend to converge both on group side and retail side. Whichever study we looked at that, I mean, on one hand, if you added all the termination rates over 5 years in the whole Australian market and put into one bundle, you still would have a data set that's not fully credible, either in the retail space or in the group space. But when you start to look at some of the experience coming from the IDAC table in the US, the updated ADI compared to the IID, the Rice-Warner analysis for late notified claims and long-term claim durations, and some of the UK studies, it's surprising they all pretty much give exactly the same results. The only table that stands out is the old IID table. So I think whichever country you're at and whichever table you look at, I guess all roads lead to Rome. And I think we've got a good idea of the long-term termination rates and that are reasonably stable and very low. The issue here, I guess, is that what we're doing is that we're getting a huge early notified claims of 10-12%, which massively impacts our annuity factors, and that we just need to bear in mind those annuity factors grow over time. You're quite right. There's an awful lot more rating factors than this one, and there's an extreme amount of difficulty in terms of pricing long-term IP. It's so easy to lose your shirt with that particular benefit type, but I think it is priceable.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now the bigger problem is probably the shorter term termination rates. I mean, obviously being higher, having a difference of 10% in the short term rate is a much bigger financial impact than 10% on the long term rates, because that's where you get most people off claim. But yes, I think down the road, once we've been able to get better data, we'll get better insights, and that I mean, there's been a lot of talk of individual pricing, and that could be done on a sort of individual reserve sort of methodology as well, I guess.
Question. Last chance. Other reinsurers in the room, maybe opportunity to get some good information here. Okay. No takers? Okay, well, on that note, we might just wrap it up, and thank you, speakers. Very insightful.